So haunting, so lyrical. We're back with another edition of After the Buzzer. Gordy Jones. Gordy, how are you, my man?
Outstanding. And yourself?
I'm well. Mike Gross. And we're going to be joined in a little bit by the elusive one.
He is that.
Andrew Callahan. We really want to talk about Bill Belichick.
Yep.
And Andrew is overqualified for that job because he covers the Patriots for the Boston Herald.
Mm-hmm.
And lots of other things going on in that realm. Mm-hmm. Bill Belichick's sons are going to be coaching.
But not him.
But he's not. Apparently, he's not.
Yeah. I mean, there's no room at the inn.
I saw today that for the first time since 1975, he will not be coaching in the NFL. That's just crazy.
And here's what I wonder. Does this mean he's done? I mean, he's going to be, he's 72 now. He's going to be another year older next year. Apparently, the reason the whole Atlanta thing fell through is because he wanted complete control and Atlanta didn't want to give it to him. But who is going to want to give it to him? Because,
right.
I mean, it's not like he did a bang-up job the last several years with
the Pats. Well, yeah, that's right. That's one of the key things that I'm looking forward to hearing what Andrew has to say about
that. I'd love to know that. So I wonder if he's done. I mean, you know, maybe it's one of those things like next year, if the Cowboys flame out in the playoffs, which is not hard to envision, maybe Jerry says, okay, let's bring him down here.
Yeah.
Maybe that's what happens.
Yeah.
You know, that to me makes the most sense.
And maybe a year away from it after all these many years will make him a little more flexible. I mean, flexible in the sense that I don't need to be the GM totally, you know.
Well, it's hard to do both, I think. I think very few people can do both.
It's hard to do both, and they're different skill sets.
Yes.
So there's no reason to believe that because one somebody's good at one, they'd be good at the other, in my view.
I think it's true. I mean, I think I'm trying to think of the people who've done it. I think Mike Holmgren might have done it in Seattle, maybe? And I know there's some other examples that I can't think of off the top of my
head. Well, and the other thing is, what's the definition of a GM? Because you have... You sort of have a director of football operations, but then you also have to have a cap guy and a business
guy.
And so even if you're the GM, you're not the total GM. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, just the cap itself. I mean, there's so many permutations to it and so many things you have to think about that it boggles my mind. Like I was listening to a guy named Andy Herman who does a Packers podcast. And he was talking the other day about the ramifications of David Bakhtiari's salary and what would happen if they trade him, if they release him, if he retires, and just how, you know, the way he explained it, there's all these little things that come into it that as far as...
There's so many moving parts on a football team, an NFL team.
So, but it's really, there's so much to think about. So, yeah, you're right. It's a totally different skill set. I mean, I don't know how you can have your mind on X and O's and that stuff in addition to it. It just seems...
Yeah, and maybe our first question for Andrew will be, there's a narrative out there that Belichick the GM kind of murdered Belichick the coach in New England. So that's kind of how it looks from our distance. But he's at a much closer distance. It'll be interesting to see if he buys into that.
Yeah, so that's certainly a back burner issue, and only a small back burner because he will be here with us shortly. But we wanted to talk a little bit about the NBA trade deadline was today at 3 p.m., and the Sixers, as you noted before we came on air, they made four deals, got rid of Pat Beverly to the Bucks for Cameron Payne, and I think it was a second-round pick.
Yeah, yeah.
Traded Jaden Springer to the Celtics. So they made trades with the two teams atop the Eastern Conference, which
that's
is odd.
Pick too, but not an important one.
No. And they brought Buddy Hield over from Indiana, another team that's having a really good year. So, I mean, he addresses the need. But to me, I put this on Twitter today. I said that, you know, it's like they're kind of rearranging the deck chairs in the Titanic without Joel Embiid, which looks like, you know, they're going to reevaluate him in a month. I don't know when that means he might be able to come back before the playoffs, but they might not be in the playoffs by then.
So the question is, does all of this activity suggest that they're kind of punting on this year?
That's how I would view it. Mike, how do you feel?
That's how I think you're probably right about that. You kind of talked me into that before we went on the air.
Yeah.
That's I think that's probably right. I think they probably know, and the Sixers are historically mysterious about injuries,
mm-hmm.
and this is another example of that. So we think that mm-hmm. it, what are they going to they're going to evaluate him in a month? Yes. Embiid, I'm talking about.
Yes, for so the
that's evaluate him. That's yeah. not he's back in a month.
Right.
So
that takes us to mid-March, and the season's is the regular season is basically another month beyond that. So can he play himself into shape? I mean, that's another thing. We always know that his conditioning is always sort of hit and miss.
Yeah.
So I don't know. To me, they probably know more than they're saying. They probably know that the severity, just the fact that they couldn't call it a meniscus tear, they wouldn't even call it that. And then he has surgery on it. Well, what does that suggest? It suggests he has a meniscus tear.
Yeah, it does. Although we're not doctors.
No, we're not doctors. But see, that's sort of the problem when you're mysterious. Then you open yourself up to even more speculation than you would otherwise. It kind of is counterproductive, I think.
Yeah, there's a long tradition of it. I mean, I guess they just don't care about that.
No, they clearly don't.
Yeah, but as far as basketball substance to all of this,
right?
Buddy Hield, what do you think he's got?
It's a nice piece if you have Joel Embiid, right?
Yeah.
It's a great piece if you have Joel Embiid and Tyrese Maxey out on the court, you know, running high screen and roll, and you have Buddy Hield out there to pop threes.
He's a shooter.
Yeah.
He's a perimeter shooter. He's 6'4", 6'5", right?
Yeah. And he's got a track record, and he's been in the league for a while. And, you know, he can knock down shots, but, I mean, again, does any of it matter? I question whether...
Now you're getting deeply philosophical.
I think they're 4-11 now without Embiid. They got smoked last night by Golden State, which is just a shell of its former self.
They are an interesting team. I think Golden State is an interesting team in this... In this trade deadline context.
They didn't do anything at all.
What do you think they're thinking?
I can't even imagine what they're thinking. Because I thought maybe they would, trade Wiggins for something. You know, there was talk that maybe they'd trade Kuminga. But, you know, Kuminga, I actually think he's having kind of a good year.
He's been better. It seems like they go to him more now, and he's kind of responded to that, I think. Yeah.
But on the other side...
You see them play a lot. I see them a lot, at least parts of a lot of their games. They're just on TV a lot because of Steph. Everybody wants to watch Steph.
And for good reason.
He's
still good, but the rest of the operation is kind of a disaster.
You know, it reminds me a little bit of, this is an odd one, but the Celtics when the McHale and Bird and Parrish went. Yeah. And the Golden State has done some decent things, I think, to try to extend the reign, but getting Chris Paul, some of the other moves they made. But, you know, if Wiggins would have turned out to be 75% of what he looked like he was going to be 2 years ago.
In the playoffs especially, yeah.
I mean, they won it 2 years ago.
And he's just taking a note. And the other thing is, like, they took Wiseman number 2 overall that 1 year, and they probably should have taken LaMelo Ball, right?
I understand why they took Wiseman.
Yeah, I do too. But he just turned out not to be very, especially the defensive end, he was a disaster. Just never really developed. Because they thought they could straddle the whole, we have these old guys over here who've done it for us, and here come our new guys, and the new guys haven't quite bridged that gap, you know?
And then, you know, I think it made sense for them to throw Chris Paul in there, and that has been a moderate, you know.
Well, now he's hurt. He's been hurt.
And so now he's hurt, as he has often been.
That's what happens with old guys.
And then Draymond being such a goofball. It's sort of amazing how well that run worked out for a long time. And then they kind of stole one 2 years ago. They kind of stole one. They probably should have won one more when they were really good, but they probably stole this one. So you end up even, and now I think it's over. Steph Curry, I would be having a hard time cranking up the enthusiasm for this situation and even for the rest of my career. He's one of the guys that you would think would be the most likely to stay at one place his whole career.
Yeah.
One of the things they were saying on ESPN today was that it was interesting is that, he's sort of analogous to LeBron in sort of being a player of this era. But LeBron would be making noise behind the scenes to change this.
Yes.
And Steph
doesn't do that. Probably apparently, at least as far as we know.
Apparently, as far as we know, that's right.
He just seems to go along and get along, which, you know, I guess that's good in a way, because LeBron does play general manager all the time. Like, look at what he did. Like, he posted on Twitter the the hourglass with no explanation and has offered no explanation since then. What does that even mean? Does that mean he's going to retire? Does that mean that the time is running out on this particular edition of the Lakers, which, by the way, they didn't do anything either?
You know what I think it means? These are the days of our lives.
There you go. He was watching that during on a game day or something.
There's your pop culture reference.
But it is interesting, though, that you know that run is over, and it was a by NBA current NBA standards, that's a pretty long run. It was pretty much more or less a decade.
Yeah,
and they won four. Yeah. That's pretty good.
They did great. They did. They one of the great runs that one of the ones that you have to mention. We were talking about this last week, kind of. But anyway, back to the Sixers because they are kind of our home base for this NBA stuff.
Indeed.
What is Embiid's contractual situation?
He's got. Let me check that. He's got a couple more years, I believe.
I think he's got. Yeah, my thinking. I somehow think it's two more.
Is that right? Like $40 million or something like that.
Yeah.
He signed a 4-year, $213 million extension that runs through 2026-27.
Oh, okay. Well, that's
and averages. Yeah, averages $52 million a season. That's not bad work if you can get it.
That's he should be able to get by on that.
I'm guessing he will.
Yeah. So anyway, he's not probably not going anywhere in the short term.
No.
You don't say. Who knows? Crazy stuff happens. But I guess it is kind of a shame that they're not going to get to play this out with this group, at least for this year.
I was interested
what they were going to do in the playoffs. Yeah.
I mean, they made a lot of sensible additions, on the margins to support the Embiid Maxi core. Now Embiid's done, at least for now, and maybe for the rest of the year, probably for the rest of the year.
Yeah.
And now you don't know what that was going to look like.
And we should point out, Pat Beverly, Marcus Morris, and Korkmaz, they're all gone. They're all former Sixers. And boy, Marcus Morris is and the Morris brothers have really
well traveled.
and of course, they played high school basketball in Philly. I saw them play in high school a couple times.
How about that?
Yeah, they won. I think they were the first team. They were on a school called Prep Charter, which
I remember that.
I haven't heard about for years. Does that school still exist? I don't know. But anyway, I think they were the first Philly team after Philly joined the PIAA like in 06 or something like
that. That's right. That's right.
Something like that. I think they were the first to win a state title. And they had both brothers on the same team.
I remember that. I wonder if Prep Charter does exist. That's interesting.
I remember that. I saw them. They beat a York Catholic team that was very good. I think they might have beat Trinity, too. They were in a... Yeah, that was maybe when there were four classes and they were maybe AA, I think. I haven't heard anything about that. And I'm right. I'm totally immersed in that because I'm doing my annual top 10 teams in the state.
Oh, that's right. It looks like it still exists. I'm looking here on the Google machine. Is this the same thing? Prep Charter School of Math, Science, and Technology and Careers? Is that the same place?
I think that is the same place, yeah. That is the same place. So it still exists, but boy, they are buried. And there are so many good teams in Philly. Oh, my God.
Who are the better teams down there?
It's ridiculous. Well, the usual, Roman Catholic.
Mm-hmm.
Roman Catholic, which has two sons of Mark Jackson.
Oh.
Who are, one of them is 6'8", a junior, wide. He's leading them in scoring and rebounding. But then they have his brother is a 6'6", sophomore who's a guard and a shooter. Mm-hmm. And I'm hearing that he might have a little more upside.
Okay.
Maybe than the other one. Mm-hmm. And Imhotep. Imhotep has, of course. It's a lot of the usual suspects. The Catholic League is really deep. Mm-hmm. It's always like Roman and Newman Garetti, usually Archbishop Wood, and then there's two or three others that are like revolving every year. There was a Devin Prep was there for a while. Last year it was West Catholic, which is a smaller school, and they actually won a state title last year. This year, it's the bigger. It's Father Judge, which has been out of the picture forever.
I was going to say, I remember them from back in the day.
Way back in the day, St. Joe's Prep.
Okay.
Who has Aaron McKee's son.
Okay.
Yeah. And, what's he going to? I said Wood. And then Archbishop Ryan is good, too. Yeah. I think I'm going to have. And Newman Garetti. Newman Goretti.
Yeah, always good.
Newman Goretti is pretty amazing because of what they lost. They had a point guard that transferred to that Monteverde Academy last year. They had another guard who was going to be their best player. He was going to St. Joe's. He tore his ACL. He's out for the year. Uh-huh. And then they had a small forward type kid who's going to Hofstra, who was out for 6 weeks or so. Now, he just came back last week. And they're like 18-2, you know. Okay. They seem to, that guy's a good coach. And Carl Aragale is his name.
You know? Okay.
So, anyway, I'm trying to figure out how to rank these teams.
Well, that's a challenge because there's a lot out there to consider.
It is, and I don't want to make it a literal top 10. I want to have some geographic, spread it out geographically. I want to mention small schools that are doing really good things. So it's a juggling act. And also, the other thing is there's two games tomorrow.
Okay.
That will affect. Like if Roman Catholic plays St. Joe's Prep tomorrow.
Oh.
If St. Joe's Prep wins that game, then I'm going to have to rethink the rankings, you know.
You want to be as current as possible.
And there's another game out in the West that same way. Okay. So.
I was thinking, just to change subject for just a second, at the trade deadline, it looks like the Knicks made some shrewd things. I mean, they already added OG Anunoby earlier, and then they traded with Detroit today, and they got Bojan Bogdanovic and Alec Burks, two perimeter guys. So they're pretty deep. Although, John Gonzalez, who's been our guest on this podcast, he tweeted that he wants to see how a Knicks team works that's 10 deep under Tom Thibodeau, since Tom Thibodeau would play four guys like in Hoosiers if he could.
Yeah, that's true. It sounds like, it sort of looks like, when you watch him play, it sort of seems like Brunson, as tremendous as he is, needs a little help as far as shot creation and everything. Yeah. So it sounds like they agree with what I just said based on these deals, right?
I think they have a nice team now.
Yeah, they got better. I think they maybe are the one team that, I mean, I don't even know. A lot of these guys, I don't know well enough to even know, but it seems to me that they're one team that is pretty good and got a little better.
Yeah, and same can be said for Dallas and Oklahoma City. Oklahoma City got Gordon Hayward.
I forgot about that.
I'm not sure if Gordon Hayward's still a viable player. I mean, he was really good for a while, but he's had his share of injuries.
But maybe it's a little bit of the same argument as for the Knicks.
Maybe so.
You know, give your boy a little help there, the point guard. But I can't think of his name.
You're thinking of Shea Gilgeous-Alexander.
Yeah.
Well, I'm looking at Hayward's numbers this year. They ain't bad. He's averaging 14.5 a game and shooting 47 from the floor, 36 from three, and 76. So that ain't
that's okay.
As a supplemental guy, he's already 33. How'd that happen?
I don't know. Can't explain it.
But Dallas traded for PJ Washington from Charlotte, so Charlotte had the fire sale, which you would think they would, since they're a very poor team. And PJ, that's Dallas kind of has a nice team too. I mean, you know, who knows if Kyrie is going to like set it on fire at some point, but when you have Kyrie and Doncic, assuming they can coexist, and you got some other guys, you know, like the Tim Hardaway Juniors of the world, Derek Lively has been a nice addition for their team. They have a pretty nice team.
I just hate watching them play.
I do too, because it's just like basically two guys. But right now, OKC and Minnesota, Chris Finch, coach Minnesota, tied for the top seed in the West at 35-16. Actually, Denver's 35-16 also.
Yeah, I thought it might be a fourth team in there.
The Clippers are 34-16, so four teams separated by a half game. Yeah, that's incredible. The Sixers, by the way, are down to fifth. So if they fall to sixth, that means they're in the play-in tournament, which is, you know. I mean, right now, Boston, Cleveland, which has been really hot lately.
Yeah, they played well lately.
Yeah. Milwaukee's third, and the Knicks are actually tied for third with Milwaukee. So that...
Oh, the Knicks are tied for third? Okay.
Yeah, so that's interesting to me.
So the whole thing is kind of passing the Sixers by.
You know, it looks that way. Like, I mean, I, you know, they're
for this year.
Right now, they're fairly solidly in. I guess they're 2.5 games ahead of Indiana for six. But I mean, I think Indiana's had a pretty nice year. Tyrese Halliburton has been a real.
Yeah, he's a beast.
He is, and they have pieces around him. I think.
Yeah, they can really score. They're not as good defensively.
They're kind of like a loyal Marymount to use a very dated reference.
West head. Yeah.
But that's how they play. They play fast and they're going to outscore you.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
that's right.
That's what they do.
Yeah. That's so who they are. That's what they do.
So
and the Lakers didn't do anything.
Mm-hmm.
Who?
The Lakers.
One of those teams that is.
They're in ninth right
now. Yeah.
They're down in the play-in tournament. Yeah, they're 27-25. So, in fact, they're just behind Dallas. Dallas is eighth. I thought Dallas is doing better than that. Dallas is 28-23. So, you know, again, as we talked about last week, it's like we're kind of at the point in the season where it's like you can't see the finish line and you can't see the starting line. And the All-Star break is coming up.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's frustrating.
And nobody's going to win 65 games.
It doesn't appear that way.
I mean, you know, it's going to be it's going to be close and...
Yeah,
pretty. I don't want to use the word parity because some of these teams are not really serious contenders. But there's probably more teams than usual who can win it this year.
I think so. I think so. Yeah. Before we bring Andrew, we wanted to bid a melancholy fare thee well to Earl Cureton, who died this past week at age 66 from unknown causes. He was on our podcast 3 weeks ago, and a really enjoyable conversation with Earl. He had a lot of nice stories to tell about his book, which just came out.
Yeah,
so it falls in the category of life ain't fair because he's an all-time good guy. Everybody agrees that you know he's just one of the people that everybody wanted on their team. Even he might not have been the best player, but he was a good guy to have around. An energetic guy, wasn't going to be a problem. You knew he was going to work hard. You knew he was going to accept whatever role he had. And he played between the NBA and overseas. He played 17 years. That's a substantial career.
Yeah.
And the funniest thing, which we mentioned when he was on, he wanted to entitle his book "You Ain't Shit" because when he went back to Detroit to play on the playgrounds or in the gyms, the playground legends would say that to him all the time, which is
and now the Hall of Fame campaign for Muggsy Bogues might.
Yes, that's right. That's right. Unfortunately,
it's a shame. So it's so weird that we had this conversation with him.
Weeks ago. It hit me like a ton of bricks.
I don't. I don't know. I mean, of course, we couldn't tell that he had any health problems. It's stupid to even say that out loud. But I mean, he was certainly energetic and had a lot to say. And
certainly seemed to be enjoying life. He was an ambassador for the Pistons, seemed to be enjoying that.
Yeah.
So
it's a weird and sad thing.
Yes. Yeah. So R.I.P. to Earl Cureton for sure.
Cureton, absolutely. He's here. You've been waiting for him. You've been clamoring for him. Andrew Callahan, who covers our old pal, who covers the New England Patriots for the Boston Herald. Andrew, how's it going, man?
You must have me confused with someone else. I don't know anyone in my life, wife, mother, sister, friends, who have ever clamored for me. But I'm filling in for someone you described in that way. I will do my best to live up to that.
Oh, my God.
Okay, let's... let's start with this, because obviously we want to talk about Bill Belichick. We had Andrew on previously this season, because I just think this is such a fascinating story. This guy that a couple of years ago everybody would have said is the greatest coach in NFL history. Anyway, let's start with this, Andrew. There's a narrative out there that Bill Belichick, the general manager, murdered Bill Belichick, the coach. And that's kind of how it looks from our distance. How does it look? I imagine you don't think it's that simple. How does it look from as close as you are?
I think that is the most significant factor in Bill Belichick and the Patriots parting ways as they did last month. Mm-hmm. And it's not simply about one free agent class or a bad first-round draft pick or even the fact that they haven't hit on a first-round draft pick arguably since 2012. Looks great, but you go back through the history, that's exactly what it is. It's a lot of things, and part of that was the hiring of Matt Patricia and Joe Judge as his lead offensive assistants a year ago, the complete failure of the offensive staff he put together this past season, and just a culmination of a lot of interpersonal things with the crafts. But between the drafts, free agency, the coaching decisions, it all comes up for me in two numbers: 29-39, his record over 4 years, and you might be the greatest coach of all time, but no one is surviving that.
There you have it. Okay. So, what we've heard is that going to Atlanta fell through because he wanted to have the same thing in Atlanta. What's your sense of why he isn't apparently going to coach in the NFL next season?
So Atlanta was the only team to interview him, and it sounds like that he lost the ear of Arthur Blank, who initiated the first interview. It was a one-on-one, which 3 weeks ago now, on a Monday or Tuesday. Later in the week, he meets with the rest of the team brass, and there's Rich McKay, and there's Terry Fontenot, and there are other people in the Falcons front office. And my understanding is actually he might have been a little flexible on working with Fontenot, who stayed as the GM. Meanwhile, right. Rich McKay is no longer in the football power structure. This is for, like, I don't know, the three Falcons fans who listen to this. he's out of the pecking order when it comes to football decisions. And it just seems like the longer the search went on, you're interviewing younger candidates and more candidates who are not even available the following week. You know, they won out, and it makes sense because all of them are fighting to keep their jobs and to do things the way they want to.
Yeah.
And Bill Belichick is not only just going to come in and say, I'm the boss. He's going to say, you're staying in later, you're working harder, and we're all doing this my way, and there's the highway of none.
Yeah. Is he done, Andrew, do you think? Would somebody hire him next the next cycle, or is this it?
I would give it at least a 50% chance that he's done, if not more.
And wow.
It's because when, let's say, okay, this is January or February 2025.
Right.
He will be turning 73 in a matter of weeks.
Right.
And so I think the Falcons calculus had to be partly like, okay, let's say we hire. Mm-hmm. Let's say we turn over football operations. We redo our scouting system, what we prioritize, how we play offense, how we play defense. No, mm-hmm. Joe Judge is going to come with him, Josh McDaniels and Matt Patricia. Mm-hmm. Well, how long is this going to last?
Right.
And this year you would have said 3 or 4 years. Next year, are you going 2 to 3? And if so, is that worth the trade-off?
Right.
Because we're going to do this all over again, unless you want to throw Josh McDaniels to be his successor. The answer is probably no. I think he'll be excellent in media, wherever he chooses to be, in the interim. And maybe there's a team like Dallas or Philly that needs a new head coach mid-season.
Wow. Belichick and Philly? That would be an interesting collision.
Howie Roseman has control over. They're more analytically driven and all these different things. But, you know, I think he would want to go to a winner.
Yeah.
Someone pre-ready, because he wants that record. He wants Don Shula's record, and that's where the fit, I think, would be if there is one.
Mm-hmm.
So what broadcast role do you see him in? That's interesting.
The Tony Romo screaming role. That's it.
You know what I would love, fellas, is, and other people have pitched this too, but I haven't heard the term for it. I want a Bellicast. I want it on Peacock. I want it to be simultaneous with the Sunday Night Football broadcast. And if football is, Peacock is being shoved down all of our throats, at least for one wild card game every year, at least give me the chance to say, okay, I want to choose this first with Belichick. He'll need an ex player. Maybe Devin McCourty moves from the studio just to bring a little bit more juice. But Bill, watching a game, I think he has to be, I don't care how you feel about the Patriots, in your top 5 people that you know or have heard of, you'd want to sit on a couch with and watch a football game with, let America sit on that couch with him and pay $5 a month to do it.
Sell it, baby. That's interesting because, of course, they do that now for certain big games like the national championship game in college football where they have 6 different feeds and they do have coaches sitting in a room, and he'd be better at that than than any of those guys that I've ever seen.
I love the idea.
Yeah, you are.
Sure. Now, I would bet, because I think he'll be around the league, I think plenty of owners, even GMs, being head coaches, would wisely ask him if they feel secure enough in their jobs. Hey, come in, be a consultant, watch what we're doing. You have any feedback? And so he would probably want to free himself up during the week, right? But on Saturday and Sunday, I think add him to Sunday NFL Countdown with ESPN. He's got a very close relationship with Adam Schefter. Or maybe they have a shakeup at CBS, which has been rumored with their Sunday pregame show.
Interesting.
Where he can either, you know, zoom in from Nantucket and work there, or just make the trip to New York once a week, or Bristol, Connecticut, and then go back.
What if there is a Bellicast, are we going to have just like a video of his dog sitting in front of the computer like in the draft the other year?
Infamously, yeah. Right. Make it homie.
This is not where I expected the pod to go, but I don't believe he actually has much contact with Nike. That belonged to a one-time girlfriend of his. Ideally, we'd love the dog. Maybe we can get a new dog and bring it in.
Andrew, when you started covering the Patriots, you must have had some expectation in the back of your mind that you would be covering the end of the Belichick era. How has that expectation jived with reality, or has it jived with reality at all?
So when I came aboard in the summer of 2018, I think that was already a question for me, which pro tip for anyone else who's doing an intro video of this media company that you're joining, and the first thing you want to know is to say, how is this going to end? How is the greatest football experience of all this fans watching lives going to be the difference between Brady and Belichick? Not exactly a happy tune to play in your first, but that's what I did. Now, as far as Belichick and the expectation with him at the end, I don't think I'm alone in this. I was shocked, stunned, floored at how bad it got here. And I've since documented this in a long story with my colleague Doug Kite of the Herald, all the dysfunction within the coaching staff for a second straight year. Last year, I wrote a similar piece with Karen Garigian, just because you just always gave Belichick the benefit of the doubt. The phrase up here for so long was "In Bill we trust."
Right.
Okay? Obviously, God normally fits into that phrase. And there's no coincidence that Bill and God were on the same level for so long. But 8-9 gives way to 4-13. The squabbles with the quarterback, the barren roster. Like, it was worse than I ever could have imagined in 2018, 2019, 2020, 2021. But we've lived it, and that's how it went.
Well, give us some examples of dysfunction within the ranks there.
Sure. So I'll go back to 2022. Matt Patricia and Joe Judge are the lead offensive assistants for the Patriots. And around midseason, you know, Joe Judge, first of all, was not liked at all by his quarterback, Mac Jones, who's had his own sins, we all have, and his were, you know, kind of acting out in a way that teammates and people on staff found to be a little bit immature. But midway through the season, Joe Judge in these team meetings, we heard from people who were in there, kind of got phased out. They didn't see him as much anymore because he wasn't really adding anything on there. And in fact, had instances where he would give a coaching point to the players. He'd sometimes be involved with the receivers or tight ends. He would walk away in practice, and then another assistant would come over and go, no, it's not actually that.
Wow.
So that was last year. Naturally, Joe Judge gets reassigned from quarterback's coach to associate head coach. Then you go last year where, you know, there are two stories I have on the record. They lose 10-6, I believe it was, against the Giants. Then they lose 6-0 against the Chargers. And after each of these losses, late November and early December, Adrian Phillips' safety telling me on the record, well, I guess we have to give up zero next week. Devon Godshaw, after the Chargers loss, Devontae Parker dropped the pass. Taekwon's got to be better. All these different players need to do their job because we as a defense, like, can't do anything more than we already are.
Yeah.
So it's that kind of infighting you just never expect in New England, but really became commonplace towards the end of last year.
It's crazy.
How did this consummate manager of people allow that to happen? I'm just fascinated by this story. I'm amazed by this.
Yeah, it's a great question, and I think it speaks to what used to be a real asset for the Patriots, this kind of consummate belief and confidence, arrogance certainly for assistants who then left and carried this with them and flop because they're not Bill Belichick, the greatest coach of all time. Bill got the benefit of the doubt, as we just covered publicly and privately. Yeah. But when his circle became smaller, and the turnaround here has been brain draining, losing executives, coordinators, assistant head coaches, position coaches who have just left because they weren't being heard, Belichick's circle got smaller. He still carried that same sort of arrogance with him, but his mistakes were not checked by anyone who not only ever had an equal say, but these are people that were lesser replacements for the people that left and became GMs in Tennessee or left to become, you know, head coaches elsewhere. And not all of them were successful. Obviously, Patricia came back, Judge came back. But at the end, those are the people closest to him. Those are the people ineffective at their jobs who were propped up in New England. And so he just didn't. He had blind spots, and those blind spots, bottom line, because of the arrogance and the confidence, came back to bite him, thinking this isn't my fault, or this will be better, or this is on the players, and they need to listen to the guys that I hired to coach them.
What kind of sense do you have of Jared Mayo, who was promoted from inside linebackers coach to succeed Belichick? What's he all about?
So Mayo is a very different type of coach. He started with the team in 2008. Gerard was a first-round pick out of Tennessee. And he played for 8 years. Towards the end of those 8 years, was really injured. So he basically morphed into, as he's rehabbing, this unofficial coaching assistant. Got very close with Bill's sons, who were recently on staff. Steve just left to coach at the University of Washington. Brian is staying on as an assistant. But that got his coaching career unofficially started. He comes back in 2019. When I talk about this brain drain.
Right.
They you know, Brian Flores goes to be the head coach of the Miami Dolphins. Mm-hmm. You have plenty of players who went up and left with him to Miami, as well as other assistants. And so they need people just to come in and plug holes immediately. Gerard is one of them. Mm-hmm. As soon as he stepped foot in the building, he was the fastest rising Patriots assistant ever under Bill Belichick. He got a position coach job right away and never coached at any level of football anywhere. 5 years later, they obviously announced him as a head coach.
Mm-hmm.
Because in his contract, the year earlier, when his old contract had expired, they had installed a succession clause where whenever Belichick leaves, and the crafts thought this would be at the end of the 2024 season, not 2023, he would succeed him as head coach. So that happens. And Mayo is 37.
Yep.
He's an ex-player. He's a player's coach. And in his own words, he coaches from love, which is to say, and I think this goes for, you know, guys at the high school level, college level, I want to connect with you first on a human level. Yeah. I want to know you. Mm-hmm. So that when I need to demand more of you in the way that, you know, we were all accustomed to growing up, hard-ass coaches just like Belichick, you are going to give it to me because, you know, I respect you for something other than being a player or someone in my employ. And that is a big difference for Belichick, who never had personal relationships with players and did that deliberately. That came after, when they would retire, when they would come back. Mm-hmm. Even Tom Brady never once went to dinner with Bill when he was a player here.
Whoa.
That's going to be different with Gerard.
So he's Jared has made he's hired Alex Van Pelt to be his offensive coordinator, DeMarcus Covington to be his defensive coordinator, Jeremy Springer to be his special teams coordinator, and offensive assistant is Ben McAdoo. Where do you come down on as far as those hires go?
Ben.
Yeah. Wow.
I think DeMarcus was a natural promotion. His contract was up.
Right.
In New England. Talented guy. He's 34. Mm-hmm. You know, had been their defensive line coach since 2019, coaching assistant before then.
Mm-hmm.
You know, well regarded by players. Jeremy Springer's also in his early 30s, mm-hmm. only 2 years of NFL experience, but he coached as a special teams coordinator before then at Marshall, mm-hmm. under former Penn State assistant Charles Huff, who's still the head coach at Marshall.
Right.
And then before that was the special teams coordinator in Arizona. So he's got a little bit of experience, but he's a very green coach, high energy. And then Ben McAdoo, I gave the Alex Van Pelt hire a C+. Mm-hmm. He's just been around. There's nothing that kind of fizzles or jumps off the page to me. He's very, very well respected, and everybody I've talked to loves him. Mm-hmm. But Ben McAdoo, I don't get. Like, that dude was out of football for three of the last 6 years, just completely fell apart with New York, and hasn't coached a top 10 scoring offense since 2016. So that all adds up to
who's gonna fill the void here? And this is just me being ignorant, I guess. But in the football operation, who's gonna be making those decisions that Bill that hurt at the end of Belichick's reign?
So it's a very timely question because yesterday it was reported, and I was able to confirm that Elliot Wolf, who has been in their front office the last 4 years, but is more I would say better known as the son of Ron Wolf, Hall of Famer, Morty can take it from here. Longtime GM in Green Bay. And
Andrew, don't encourage him.
I'm sorry. I know exactly what I did, and I went there anyway.
Yep.
After his father retired in 2014, years climbing the ladder in Green Bay, interviewed for the Packers GM job in 2018, got denied, so he moves on to Cleveland, assistant GM there for 2 seasons. Comes to New England first as a consultant and is this nebulous title of like director of scouting the last 4 years. So he is the leadership season, brings this new perspective because he grew up in a different school of scouting and a different attitude, but is largely collaborating with folks who have already been here because the Kraft said Bill is the problem. Bill had final say, and Bill did a lot of research. Like, he was on the scouting trail, but sometimes would just go with his gut over all of the information the scouts had assembled and built on this board. You just say, epic, giving the guy who's, you know, a few spots down, not the person we have next on the board. It happened a lot. Sometimes there were hits, others there were misses. As we all know, a lot more misses lately.
Hmm. Wow. What happened to Mac Jones? He was in the Pro Bowl this rookie year, and he's just been, speaking of meh, or worse than meh, what happened to him?
He's sub-meh.
He completely sub-meh. It fell apart. He broke in real time in a way that honestly was a bit sad, and in the process, as I reported, just lost the locker room. And that's not only just the defense, so I told you, two guys on the record, which also you never see in New England, just saying, well, I guess we have to shut them out because they're effing up and we can't score points. That's not our job.
Mm-hmm.
Just acted in a way that, you know, first of all, this is, I would largely regard as small potatoes, but when you have other issues, it gets amplified a bit. Right. He and his backup, Bailey Zappe, never really spoke. Like, these are
what?
Different elevators in the team hotel would study film in different rooms. What? And I'm sorry, but if your job is the backup, which was Bailey to start the season and Mack to end it, your job is to support the starter.
Oh,
whenever.
My God.
Drew Bledsoe did that as Tom Brady's backup. Aaron Rodgers did that. Jordan Love did that for Aaron Rodgers, and on and on and on and on. They just didn't talk. So part of this was Mack being frustrated with the offense in 2022 that did not benefit him with Matt Patricia and Joe Judge. In comes Bill O'Brien. He actually had a decent start. Good games against the Eagles and Dolphins. Hey. They have late game takes, but they're very, very, very close. Mm-hmm. And then so-so against the Jets. Breaks mentally with bad pick sixes and Cowboys and Saints, and then so-so against the Raiders. Good win against the Bills. But it's just confidence was gone. The teammates could see it. They had turned in him. And there was no support from a bad offensive line to the worst pass-catching core that you'll find in the league. And a coaching staff that, aside from Bill O'Brien, is going to be cleaned out here soon, is in the process of being cleaned out. And I don't think any of those guys, quarterback, running back, receivers, tight ends, offensive line coaches, are going to be in those positions anywhere else in the NFL at the start of the season.
So does it follow that New England has the third pick in the draft? If you figure the Bears are going to take Caleb Williams, assuming they stay in that spot, and Washington takes Drake May, does New England take Jaden Daniels, or do they go Marvin Harrison, or what is your expectation?
It's a great question, and one that I'm already sick of hearing locally.
sorry.
It's the most important question, though. Like, I respect it. I understand it. It's just local radio. We got to get a little more creative. We need to get you guys out here. Spice things up. We're going to have a new angle. And just come with a show name, and I'll make some calls. But
I think let's do that.
The trouble with Jane Daniels is not specific to him. It's more of the question of drafting a quarterback is different than drafting any other position for a football team. Yep. It's not just talent and scheme fit and your attitude. It's, can you be the face of the franchise? Can you carry all hopes and dreams of an organization? Mm-hmm. Can you beat everything the coaches want you to be day in and day out and emanate their message and drive the culture and be that guy that everyone can rely on? Yeah. I don't know many people in my life who could do that at their work in any kind of capacity where you're looked to with all that pressure and that example and just be that consistent and excellent. So if you feel like someone can grow into that role, because obviously rookies get some time to grow, great, take them. But if there's any kind of doubt, those mistakes typically set a franchise back 3 or 4 years.
Yeah.
And some of the decision makers are going to go, I'm not fully buying it. And if you're not all the way in, I don't think you can make that pick.
Hmm. Yeah, they're almost like public officials.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
In that town, it's almost like the quarterback is almost like a public official.
It's a good way to put it.
It's an amazing thing.
Remember, speaking of Bill O'Brien, remember, Mike, when he was Penn State, he said if you're the quarterback, you're the quarterback all the time.
He talked very eloquently about that. Yeah. Everybody's watching you every minute of every practice, every in the locker room, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah. How about welcoming? Are you welcoming Bill back to town, Andrew? Maybe.
Could be. There's some local that says he's favored. It's just a matter of time, and then supposedly it's him and this coach from Brigham Young, I think Notre Dame at the end. So he might be playing the longest con with Ohio State. Oh yeah, I'll be your OC. Yada yada yada. Screw up all the recruiting for a month, and then come back and take
it. Yeah, he's a double agent from Penn State.
That's right. Maybe that's a little Penn State play there by Bill. I didn't even think of that. Very, very impressive. And you know, the thing about it is, if he bails on Ohio State, then Ryan Day just does what he really wants to do anyway, right?
Yeah, that's good.
Anyway, all right. So, what kind of a football team next year, the Patriots?
Well, their schedule can't get any harder because they had the number one most difficult schedule in the league last year, and that was due to a variety of factors. So that will help. That being said, you could have similar level of quarterback play, another strong defense as they did, and still finish around 5-12, which right now, look, their roster, they have a lot of internal free agents, actually, that are going to be coming on the open market. If they lose them, you have the worst roster in the league. That's that simple.
Ooh, man.
But it's also who you bring in to replace them, or who you bring in to bolster your offensive line, or your receivers, or your tight ends. They don't have a tight end under contract, by the way, including old friend Mike Gesicki. Great guy.
Yeah.
Very good. Love talking to him in the locker room.
He's not under contract?
No, he's on a one-year deal and had a tough season. Everyone did.
Yeah.
So he could resign, but we'll see. And so I would just say 5-12, I think, is a safe bet. This is a 4-13 football team. They deserve to be there. They're going to be going major change. And I think we'll have growing pains. But, you know, hopefully there's a little bit more variance. You know, like, this is a bad team that only really beat a other bad teams. I hope there's an upset in there somewhere, just to spice things up a little bit, you know?
Well, the one guy that I hope stays around is the guy who, and I think I saw this on something you tweeted, Andrew, the guy who went up to Saquon Barkley and said, and I quote, "You lucky we ass."
It was old Big Ten friend Jabril Peppers.
Oh, wow.
That is a great quote. And then you said something that I would have said, which is, I don't know, but You lucky we ask is objectively a funny comment. No matter what else is going on.
It's right up there with the Michael Ray Richardson quote from back in the day, "The ship be sinking," which also applies to the Patriots, actually.
That's a good one. All right, Andrew. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks so much.
Yeah, we're
glad
really
we had a chance to connect.
It's really an interesting beat you got up there, buddy. I hope you're enjoying it. I hope it's not driving you nuts, and we'll be reading.
Yes, we will.
Appreciate you guys as always. It meant everything to me to connect with you guys while I was in Pennsylvania coming up. And I love when I get that text from Gordy. Next time, I promise to only reschedule twice. we'll have some t-shirts made. They'll say, "We lucky on that." And we'll pass them around next time I get out there.
All right. Oh, man. Thanks,
well
Andrew.
Done. Well done.
Be well, sir.
See you, man.
Take care. Andrew Callahan, he's a legend, man. I love him. I just love the fact that he has been able to maintain his enthusiasm.
I think he must have done a little espresso before this.
I think maybe he was jazzed.
He was pretty jazzed.
Yeah.
I got such a kick out of that. I'm just imagining a guy going up to Barclays.
That's one of my all-time favorite quotes.
You lucky we ass.
This is the first time I'm hearing this. This is two of my favorite quotes years ago, I'm sure I've said this 100 times, but Bobby Engram made an impossible catch against Ohio State.
Oh, I know.
And Kajana Carter, that don't make no sense. And the other one I love is Andrew Toney as a rookie. The first time he went to Boston Garden, of course, you're going into the train station. You have to find your way through these catacombs.
I know this one, too.
Yeah, I know. I've said it 100 times.
But I know it. Anyway, yeah.
Where did Jim at? which I just love. Just
where
the image of Andrew.
Jim at?
If any person was born to say that, it would be Andrew Toney.
That's right. So steeped in the history. No, not at all.
This basketball cathedral. No, where did Jim at?
Where did Jim at? Hell with the history.
And then he went in and probably dropped about 35 on him.
Yeah, the dude could play. I just am amazed at what's happened with the Patriots.
Yes.
And what Andrew was describing.
Yes.
It's just amazing.
The quarterbacks don't talk. Brady never had dinner with Belichick. Are you kidding me?
Did he just lose touch? Did he just assume I can wave a magic wand?
Or just his ego got to the point where he thought he was bigger than the operation.
It's such a people business. And,
yep.
And you know, the guys that you see like on ESPN, like Teddy Bruschi and who's the other guy, the lineman that's on there in the morning a lot. I mean, these guys idolize Belichick. These guys, they don't want to hear that he's not insanely great as a coach, but at the end, he was not insanely great at anything, apparently.
And it's like, it's overly simplistic to say that it was just, you know, he lost Brady. Because it's like, obviously that's a huge part of it at any level. You got to have the right quarterback or you're done. Especially in the NFL, where it's so quarterback-driven. But, from what Andrew said, it was a lot deeper.
Oh, yeah. And they did not draft well. They made a lot of bad decisions hiring and firing coaches.
Yeah.
And just made a lot of bad decisions. It's just...
Yeah.
It's
endlessly fascinating, though. Just
I think it is, too. Yeah.
Everything has to align.
I mean, we've said that. I've said this before. This is the most interesting thing that's happened in the NFL to me for a while. I'm fascinated by this.
Yeah, I think it's always interesting just how many things have to go right for A, to win it all, B, just to be in the hunt.
Yeah.
Just to be in the hunt.
And in theory, the coach is supposed to have control or some control of those things that go right. So how do we assess him now? I don't know.
Legacy is one of those things that's so tough to determine. But I mean, I think, you know, when you get the 30,000-foot view, you know, 5 years, 10 years, whatever from now, I think this part will get forgotten.
It'll get forgotten, but not by me.
Right,
I don't think. I mean, this will still be part of the puzzle for me.
But I mean, if you think about it, even Don Shula toward the end, he kind of lost his
fastball. That's a good. That's an excellent point. But I don't know if it ever got it went this far.
No, it never. It was more like, you know, kind of mediocrity.
Yeah, this is it's an amazing, interesting thing. Anyway. Yeah.
But I love those details from Andrew, though. Just like, the quarterbacks don't talk.
Yeah.
What? How is that even possible?
That's incredible. And they have to. Yeah, I mean, and let's not forget, Brady went away and won another Super Bowl before he said goodbye. Man, apparently said goodbye. I think he's probably
retired
right now.
Which is another discussion for another time. Tom Brady, you know, above Greg Olsen in the hierarchy. Boy, he better be really good if he's going to be above him in that. But that's another discussion
Olsen's
for another podcast.
Yeah, that's a broadcasting story. That's interesting, too. But,
yeah.
Anyway. There you have it. That's it, gang. We'll be back again next week. Thanks so much to Andrew Callahan. Rest in peace, Earl Cureton.
Yep.
He's Gordy. I'm Mike. See you later.
See you later.